Hey guys, welcome to the Anchored Hope podcast. I'm Pastor Mike, the lead pastor of Anchored Hope Church, and I hope that while you're listening today to our podcast, you can join us on Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. at 211 Boone Street. We'd love to have you. We hope that this message is encouraging to you, and we hope that you can also join us at our location at 211 Boone Street. Also, check out our Facebook page and our website, www.anchoredhope.church. Well, we are kind of wrapping up Thanksgiving. Next week, we're going to start a new series called Skipping Christmas. Some of you, that may pique your curiosity just a little bit. So I hope you guys come back and find out what that's all about, Skipping Christmas. I'll explain a little bit more about that next week. But we're excited that you guys are here, and we are kind of coming off of Thanksgiving, and Thanksgiving is still a little bit in our mind. And I don't know how your Thanksgiving went, but for most people, typically, you work so hard on this one meal, hours of preparation, getting ready for this one meal, and you go through it all, and everybody's in the kitchen and helping, and we finally get ready, and it's finally everything's prepared, the ham, the turkey, the mashed potatoes, the rolls. Is anybody getting hungry again or just nauseous? I don't know. I'm feeling a little bit of both. But we get ready for that Thanksgiving meal, and then there's just one more thing that has to be done. There's one more barrier that we have to cross before we can get to this Thanksgiving meal. And that is that we have to answer the question. And everybody knows what the question is. It's this: what are you thankful for? Like, my family gets us so hyped, so ready for Thanksgiving meal, but we have to stop and we have to answer this one question, and everybody has to go around and everybody has to give an answer. And I don't know how it was in your home this year, if you did this or what it was like, but my experience has always been dad or my father-in-law, they stop and they ask this question and they want this question answered, and it just gets kind of weird for a second. It just gets really silent because there's a lot of pressure in this question, right? You're like, oh man, I gotta get deep. I gotta get real deep. Especially when you're in front of your in-laws. Like, this is your time. You gotta shine. You gotta give a good answer. And it's scary because you don't wanna be first, but you almost need to be first because somebody might take your answer. And ditto is just not, it doesn't work, does it? You can't just say, me too. They'll look at you like, what is your problem? No, that's not an appropriate answer. It needs to be unique. It needs to be original. It needs to carry some weight. My daughter was very, very unique this year. I picked her up from school last week, and I noticed that on the wall was a big piece of artwork. They made this gigantic turkey and hung it on the wall, and then they took the kids' handprints, and they put them in paint, and then they cut them out, and on each of the kids' hands, they wrote what they were thankful for. And so I was picking up my daughter, and she was getting her book bag, and I saw Olivia's name, and I looked at all the other kids. The kids wrote, I'm thankful for my dad, thankful for my mom, thankful for my grandma, thankful for my brother, thankful. One even person even wrote their church. They were thankful for their church. And then I look at my daughter's name, Olivia. What is she thankful for? Pasta, chicken, and her bed. Those were the three things she was thankful for: pasta, chicken, and her bed. And she came out of the classroom, and I'm standing here, and I'm saying, Olivia, I'm admiring your art project here. You couldn't think of anything? And she said, well, Dad, everybody took mine. I can't be thankful for everybody's mom. All the moms were already thanked. And I couldn't do you either. And I'll be honest, I forgot about Brayden. But I really like my bed. And Dad, I really, really like pasta. I said, I understand, honey. But she wanted to be original, and that's how we kind of all feel in that moment. But there's another experience that some of you may have gone through this Thanksgiving, or you may have even gone through in past Thanksgiving. Does anybody ever get to that moment and you really have a hard time thinking of what you are thankful for because this year you are not as particularly thankful? This year has been a different year. 2018 has not been like past years in the circumstances that you are in, the season of life you're in. You're having a hard time coming up with something to be thankful for. Because quite honestly, right now, you are not thankful for family. If you said you were thankful for family, you may actually have been lying to your family, because the truth is that you're not happy with your mom and dad. There's resentment there, and there are past hurts, and there have been lies. Mom cheated on dad, dad cheated on mom. There are things that happened this year, conversations, fights that were had. And the truth is that you're not thankful for your family this year. Or you know, sometimes we go through experiences and we think, well, I could say my health, but there are some years where you are not thankful for your health because you're not healthy. I mean, some of us, we go through seasons and times where we've gotten bad reports, where we have found out that we are not healthy, or that we have cancer, or that there is a form of cancer, but we don't know how bad it is, and so we're still waiting on test results. We're still waiting on answers. We're going through that right now with my father-in-law, who knows he has cancer, but we don't know how serious it is, and there's still not a game plan. There's still not a timeline. We still don't know how serious it is, and so we're just waiting, and so this year, we can't be thankful for our health. So if we can't be thankful for our health, then what do we have to be thankful for? You know, there are times and periods where we cannot be thankful for our job. There are some of you who are very blessed, very fortunate, where you can say, you know what, I'm thankful for my career. I'm thankful for my job. But not all of us can live in that boat. There are many of us who quite honestly wish we could have a job change. There are many of us who do not get along with our bosses, who do not get along with our coworkers. There are many of us who are not thankful for our spouse's job, because our spouse's job is a job where they can get called away, pulled away from us at a moment's notice. Some of you who are first responders, firefighters, police officers, thank you for what you do. Your Thanksgiving was spent knowing that at any moment, a beeper or a pager or a cell phone can go off and you could get pulled away from your family and put into a dangerous situation. Some of you have family, spouses, who have to go on oil rigs and go away for weeks, days at a time away from your family. And so the truth is, you're not very thankful for your career. You're not very thankful for your job. It pays the bills, but you pray and you wish that they could find something else, that they could find something more flexible, that they could find something that would provide for your family more. So I can't be thankful for my family. I can't be thankful for my health. I can't be thankful for my job. So what do I have to be thankful for? There are many of us who go through these seasons where we're searching for something to be thankful for. We try so hard to be thankful. And we want to be thankful, for we really do, but there are just circumstances, there are barriers, there are seasons that we go through that keep us from being able to be thankful. You know, a lot of attention is drawn today to positive psychology, and a lot of psychologists, a lot of books have been written in the last couple years about just being able to cultivate, to be able to manufacture emotions. And one of those emotions is thankfulness, is gratitude. And there are a lot of books, a lot of studies that have come out over the last years that, you know, if you want to be thankful, if you want to have something in order to be thankful for, what you need to do is you just need to cultivate it. You need to make it. You need to manufacture it in some way. And you need to change your mind, because the problem is that your mind looks at the glass half empty, and you need to look at it as being half full. And there was an interesting story that I read that was in the New York Times. Catherine Price is a writer for the New York Times, and she decided to take this on as an experiment a couple years ago. And she read a lot of books and a lot of studies on cultivating thankfulness, and she wanted to try this. And so she began to do what many positive psychologists recommend. She began to take notes every single day, trying to find something to be thankful for. And so every day she wrote in her journal something to be thankful for. She began to go through different experiences and exercises in order to try to cultivate, in order to try to make gratitude and thankfulness. And so she wrote a letter to her grandma telling her how thankful she was, telling her how much she loved her. And as this experiment went on and as she continued these exercises, it was good. Good things happened. A lot of positive changes occurred. But she also began to write how some things did not ever change. She said that even though she was thankful and even though she could think of things that she was thankful for, it didn't stop her from getting into a fight with the person who had worked on her car at the dealership whenever something didn't go well. It still caused an argument. She still showed the emotion of anger very quickly. She said it also made things a little bit awkward because, yes, she wrote her grandmother a letter telling her how thankful she was and how much she appreciated her. But then her grandma called her and asked, "Do you think I'm dying?" Because it seemed as though there was a eulogy that was suddenly being written for her. She went on, and there was just some things that never changed, and there was never really an upswing. There was never anything that felt permanent. It felt like she was forcing it at all times. And so she called actually a positive psychologist, and she called him and she asked, it was a psychologist at the University of Michigan, Christopher Peterson, who wrote many books on this subject. And she said, "You know, this is what I'm experiencing. This is what's going on. It's been good. It's been good. But I'm not seeing the change that I want inside." And he responded to her. He wrote her a letter back and he says, "You know, there are no miracles. There are no quick fixes to happiness. If you add these exercises to your repertoire, you could be different 6 months from now or maybe even a year from now. But I want you to know that there is nothing that is going to permanently change you. This is not meant to be a permanent fix. This is a temporary fix." See, manufactured thankfulness, cultivated gratitude, it's good. It's a start. But I want you to know it's never going to be a permanent change. It can be something that can get you through a Thanksgiving meal. It could be something that could get you through a season of Christmas. It could be something that could get you to the new year or make you temporarily happy for that Monday that you walk into your work and you don't want to be there. Or it could get you through that meal with that family that you're really not thankful for and get you through those 3 days until you can finally get in the car and go home. But what if we could think of a way? What if there was something that could actually transform us from the inside out? Where we wouldn't have to cultivate thankfulness, but where we could just be thankful. Where we didn't have to manufacture gratitude, but it could be something that would be in us at all times, where we wouldn't have to think of something to be thankful for. We could just be thankful. Well, Paul, the apostle who turned from, you know, bounty hunter of Christians to, you know, the godfather of the Christian church, he went through this transformative revelation with Jesus and he completely changed his life. And he became this church planner and church pastor that started churches and reached so many people. And then as he built these churches and went on to build another, he always continually poured himself and discipled these churches and taught them and kept up with them. And so he writes these letters to them, always encouraging them, always pushing them, always challenging them. And he actually writes one letter to a church that he did very well with, the Church of Colossae. And in the Church of Colossae, he writes this letter that we know in the New Testament is the book of Colossians. And in this letter, he talks about thankfulness. And it's a bit mysterious, but I think inside of these couple sentences is the key to unlocking being thankful and not having to cultivate or manufacture or make up something to have to be thankful for, but to be able to just be thankful. And this is what he says in Colossians chapter 3. He says, "Let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, since as members of one body, you were called to peace, and be thankful." Let the peace of Christ, let the peace of Jesus rule your hearts. If you're not a follower of Jesus this morning, if you're here for whatever reason, curiosity, somebody dragged you, you're here for Thanksgiving, and your mom made you, whatever it may be, I want you to know that Jesus has a peace that he wants to give you. Jesus wants to give you a peace that will rule your heart, that will change you from the inside out. But there's a disclaimer. There's something that you need to know and something that you have to understand is that the peace of Jesus is not the peace of Jesus that many people talk about. The peace of Jesus that we believe in, that we talk about, is even different than what some other churches talk about. But I think a lot of us, when we hear that verse, or maybe when we've heard that verse or had that verse preached to us in the past, we've probably thought of the same kind of peace that insurance sells, right? I mean, insurance, they sell this kind of peace. Everything is going to be okay peace. And you may have heard one of those sermons or one of those messages, or maybe a family member told you that if you just follow Jesus, he'll give you peace. And that peace will be a peace that means everything is going to be okay. Hakuna Matata, right? Everything's going to be okay. Don't worry. Don't sweat it. As a matter of fact, if you do worry, if you do sweat it, if you do show an ounce of fear, you're not really being faithful, and you just don't believe in the peace enough, because if you believe, everything is going to be okay. Let me tell you something. This is the honest truth that you may have not ever been told before. That is not the type of peace that Jesus is about. As a matter of fact, you need to be warned, and you need to be told now that the peace of Jesus that he wants to give you is not a peace of safety. It's not a peace or a promise of material possessions. It is not a peace that gives you answers or clarity or wisdom in any arena. Actually, what you need to hear this morning and what you need to know before you make the decision to follow Jesus is that following Jesus is actually about being less safe and living a more dangerous, scary life. That following Jesus is not about material possessions or having enough. Actually, it's a life of giving more away. And so if you follow Jesus, and if you're following Jesus to have more, to be able to be blessed more, to have more material possessions, then you're following the wrong deity, because following Jesus is not about having more. It's actually about giving more away. And following Jesus is by no means about having clarity or getting answers. As a matter of fact, I need to warn you that if you follow Jesus, you will be more confused than ever. You will not have the answers you are looking for. You will have more questions is what you will have. And so if you're looking to follow Jesus because you're looking for a peace that lets you know that everything is going to be all right, that's Disney, not our God. Because our God, the peace that he calls us is to a life that's worth living. The peace of Jesus that he's talking about and that Paul refers to so many times is knowing that I will live a life, and even if I die or if I fail, I will be at peace in my heart and in my life because I know I did something worth living for. It's a peace that tells me that I went all in, that I did something that was worth it, that I didn't live it safe, and I didn't have all the things that I could have had in this world, and I was so confused the entire time. It felt like I was driving blind, but I have peace and rest in my heart because I can say I lived a life worth living. It means I have had a life full of purpose. And when I look back on how I lived my life, when I look back on what I did, when I look back on the decisions I made, when I look back on my relationships, I can have peace because I can say that I gave it my all, because I had purpose, because I had a life that was worth living. If you're a follower of Jesus, or if you're curious about following Jesus, you need to know that you're getting called to a life that is very different than a life that says everything's going to be okay. It's a life that says, you know what, everything may not be okay, and that's okay with me, because at least I'll have a life worth living. At least I'll know that I had a purpose in this world. I had an impact on this world. That is the kind of peace that Jesus wants to give us. It's like when you know you do something that was way too hard, that you didn't believe you could do in a million years. I remember for a couple years ago, I got my mom, I don't know why I did this, I just thought it would be fun for us to do, but I got my mom for her birthday, I got her tickets for her and I to go do the Warrior Dash, you know, kind of like the Tough Mudder run that was like 3 miles, and you're jumping through, you know, mud and going over hills and climbing up walls and going over ropes and climbing under barbed wire and jumping over fire and all this stuff. I got my mom that for Mother's Day just because I thought, hey, she's like really old, this will be something fun. And I remember she opened it up and she said, "Is this a joke? Is this a joke? You and Kate are doing this, right? Not me and you." I said, "No, Mom, you and me, we're doing this together." And she told me, "No." And I said, "Mom, no, trust me. When you do this, you will be so proud of yourself. It will be so worth it." And we did it. We did it together. And we went through that Warrior Dash. And you know what? I helped her through every bit of the way. And it's not like we were worried about place. We were just trying to survive. That's all. That was our goal. Make it through the race. And so we made it through the race. And it's funny because I just went and saw my mom for Thanksgiving. And in her bathroom, there was one picture. One picture in her entire bathroom. And guess what that picture is of? Me and her at the finish line of the Warrior Dash, covered in mud, completely drenched. And she is so proud of that picture. She is so proud that she did that. Because she looks back on it and she goes, "You know what? I can say I did it. I can say I finished. I can say I did well. I can say I toughed it out and I did that. That is the peace of Jesus that he offers us. A life that says, you know what? I climbed through the mud. I went under barbed wire. It felt like sometimes I was jumping over fire. But you know what? It was all worth it because I didn't live a life that played it safe. I had a life that was meaningful and I had a life that was full of purpose and I had a life that was full of danger around every corner. But I lived it, I survived it, and I'm still here. That's the life that Jesus is calling us to. That's the peace he wants to give us in our life. You know, but the thing is that Paul says, let that peace that he wants to give you, let that rule your heart. Let it rule your heart. Let it kind of encompass everything that you are. Let it have rule of your life and let that be the guiding principle in your life, the guiding light. Let that be what pushes you. Let that be what you strive for. Let that be what takes you chapter through chapter. But the problem is that a lot of us, we let other things rule our heart. There are other things that we have going on in our lives and in our hearts and in our mind that we sometimes give control over to, that we sometimes let us rule us and determine what it is that we do. I had friends, I haven't seen them in a long time, and this isn't the reason why, but I had friends who loved cats. They had like 3 cats. And when you walked in, I know cats are hilarious, right? And so when you walked in, there was cat furniture. There was just as much cat furniture as there was adult furniture. There was a couch for 3 people, and then there was a tower and tubes and things that went all over the house for the cats. And it was very interesting because we would go over there for dinner, me and my parents, and we would go over there, and the cats just kind of had rule over the house. The cats ruled the house, and they were, you know, it was very important. When you sat down at dinner, the cats may jump up on the table. The cats may jump in your lap. The cat may just come up on you like a parrot and start licking your ear. I mean, the cats are there, and you don't shoo the cats. Like, I was younger, and I was, like I said, I was with my parents, and I would, you know, cat, get out of here. Don't shoo the cat. Don't shoo the cat. He just loves you. He just loves you. He just wants to be with you. Don't just shoo the cat. And like, I'm over here, you know, seriously, please. No, the cat. The cat's on the table. You know, we're eating. There's food. We're passing things, and cat, you know, I mean, just cat things are happening everywhere. Just everywhere, cats. And it's just very interesting. But, you know, those cats, cats ruled their life. Really. I mean, we would ask them sometimes after church or after small group or something, hey, do you guys want to go out? Do you want to go get ice cream? Do you want to go get dinner? Oh, we can't. We got to get home to our cats. Our cats, they need to be fed. Our cats need to be let out. Our cats are probably missing us. Oh, I just know when I pull in, they're going to be meowing at the door. They're going to be at the window, just missing it. I got to go home and take care of my cats. Those cats, man, they ruled the house. They took over their lives. Everything revolved around the cats. And I mean, you know how, if you have cats, if you have animals, you know how it is. Like, you got cat dander all over you. I mean, you know, we know it. We saw it when you walked in here. You were a cat person. And I mean, the cat dander was just on them. We're like, please stop wearing black. Just quit it. Because you could just see the cats just everywhere. It's just all over them. And they ruled their lives. They had rule of that house. Now, here's the thing. If you didn't know, the cat's a metaphor. A lot of us let other things besides the peace of Jesus rule our heart and rule our lives and rule our households. A lot of us, we let depression rule our lives. A lot of us, we let anxiety rule our lives. We let fear rule our lives. We let the approval of others rule our lives. Some of us, we've even made family such an idol that family rules our lives. Where you're your own little tribe, just kind of huddled in your own corner because they are ruling your life and they, you want to stay in your own little hub. You could pick anything. Some of us, we let work, we are workaholics and our career rules our lives. And here's the thing, you let it have run of your house, you let it have run of your family, and it keeps you from so much. There are people who want to have a relationship with you, people who want to have a friendship with you, people who want to be in your life, or they even invite you to be experience something in life, be part of something else. But the thing is, you're like, oh, I got to go home and I got to feed my depression. You know, I can't do it. Nope, I got to go home and I got to go take care of this. My depression's waiting for me. My anxiety is waiting for me at home and I got to go feed it. I got to go take care of it. Can't go with you. And here's the thing. People see it all over you. They do. But nobody wants to say anything because they know the rule. Don't shoo the cat. Don't say anything. They know it's there. Let's just pretend like it doesn't happen. Don't say anything. It's all over their clothes. It's all over their face. It's all over their mind. It's all over their emotions. But don't say anything. Don't mention the anxiety. Don't mention the fear. Don't talk about the depression. Yeah, they're having relationship problems. Everybody can tell they're having relationship problems. But don't say anything. They're pretending, so let's pretend ourselves. And we let it rule our lives. And we let it rule our hearts. And I want you to know this morning that that's not the life God created you to live. God never created or intended you to have a life that's ruled by depression, that's ruled by anxiety, that's ruled by other people's approval. He didn't design you to live a life that's ruled by work and constantly making more money or buying more things. That's not the life God intended you to live. God wants to give you a life that's ruled by the peace of Jesus. And that's something completely different. And so some of us need to metaphorically get rid of the cats, because here's the thing, if you don't get rid of the cats, we all know what happens. You end up being a cat person, and you're the cat person, and all you're left with are your cats. By the way, literally, not metaphorically, I hate cats. I just want to know that that's why the animal I picked was that animal. But anyway, we got to get rid of our cats, guys. Just go tweet that out right now. Pastor says, get rid of your cats. You got to get rid of your cats, because if you don't, all you're left with at the end of this life is your cats. And here's the thing. I don't think you want to live a life where all you have to be thankful for at the end is your depression. You do not want to be left with all that you have is your anxiety. You don't want to be left with all that you had left is your bitterness. You don't want that to be the thing that is left on this earth to talk about when they describe you. You don't want this to be the thing that your kids or your grandkids, when they talk about you or when they talk about your legacy, they say, well, she was an anxious person. He was a fearful person. Well, he worked a lot. He was a workaholic. And if I could say anything about him is he worked. Don't let that be the thing that you build your legacy on and that you leave, because nobody's thankful for that. Your family's not thankful for that. Your kids are not going to be thankful for that. That is not going to be what you want to leave for them to talk about. You need something else. That peace of Jesus that he wants to give you, that is something that is worth talking about. That is a life that's worth honoring. That is a funeral that feels like a party, because we know they lived. They let that peace of Jesus rule their lives. And my goodness, it made them generous. It made them so spontaneous. It made them so fearless. They were so brave. They were so courageous. They were givers. They were just a totally different person, because the peace of Jesus ruled their life, and they lived a life full of purpose. They lived a life full of impact. They lived a life full of meaning. And all you've got to do to have that life is let the peace of Jesus rule your heart. Now, this is that cliche moment in the sermon where the pastor says something that sounds really good, but you still have no clue what it means, right? Okay, all right, that's all I need to do. If I want to be thankful, if I want to live this life, all I've got to do is let the peace of Jesus rule my heart. I got it. I don't know what to do. And I didn't know what it meant either. And then I had an experience in college that completely transformed and changed my life, that really explained to me what this meant. There was one class in 4 years of training to be a minister that was actually helpful, okay? So if you're going to be a pastor, just go take business classes. That's what you need to go do, okay? Because Bible trivia is like 90% of it. But there was this one class that I really got the most out of that I wish I could take again and again and again. It was called Personal Development of a Minister. And nobody knew what the class really was. In the syllabus, all the classes in the syllabus had a description, and this one didn't. It was this mysterious class taught by Larry Fine. And Larry Fine was this professor who had been there from the very beginning of MNU. He had taught for 45 years, and he was just like a wizard on campus. It was just like, who wants to be taught by Gandalf? Okay, go take this class. Well, what's the description? It has none. Just go, okay? So I went and took the class, and it was actually a class I had to take to graduate to get my degree in ministry. So I took the class, And here was all the class was. It was just experiments and experiences with Larry Fine. That's all it was that changed your life dramatically. And I have like stories upon stories, but there was one in particular that led me to understand what this means, to let the peace of Jesus rule your heart. We did one day, we had our desk, and he said, I want you to put your desk in a circle. So we put our desk in a big circle, and he gave us scratch pieces of paper. And he said, on each piece of paper, I want you to write, if you're a male, I want you to write father, I want you to write husband, I want you to write son, and I want you to write the career that you're hoping to have when you graduate here from Mid-American Nazarene University. And so we each wrote these things down, father, son. Of course, I wrote down pastor, husband. So we wrote all these things down, and he had hats for us. He said, here, I want you to take this hat, and I want you to put them in the hat, and I want you to mix them up. So we all had these hats in front of us, all of these titles, all of these roles were inside of this hat. And one by one, we took turns, and we went around, and we pulled a piece of paper out of the hat. So we went around, and it came to me, and I pulled out father. And every time after we pulled out a piece of paper, Larry just stood behind us. So I pulled out father, and he said, you cannot be a father. You found out that you're not going to have the ability to have kids. Your son, your daughter, they died during childbirth. And so the bad news is that you are not going to be a father. That was it. On to the next person. It would go around again. It's like playing Russian roulette. What are you going to pull out? And so we went around again, and we come to the next one. Pull out the next one. Husband, you're not going to get married. Nobody wants to be with you. Nobody wants to marry you. Or let's say you did get married. Well, they cheated on you. They found someone who was better, and so they cheated on you. They had an affair, and now you're going to go through a divorce because she would rather be with him. On to the next one, and around it went. Then it came down to son. Your parents died. They're no longer here. You can't call them. You can't text them. You can't tell them what happened. You are no longer a son any longer. Went around again. Pastor, you're not going to be able to be a pastor. You screwed up. You had one mistake. You got into one thing that was too temptatious, and now there are lies spread about you, or you did something wrong, and so you're not going to be able to be a pastor anymore, and no matter how much you ask for forgiveness, they're never going to let you back into that church, and so you can no longer be a pastor anymore. So here I am. I've just received news that I will not be a husband, that I will not be a son, that I will not be able to be a father, and I will not be able to have the career that I feel I'm called to in my life. And we went around till everybody had emptied their hat, and it was silent, except for the sobbing that was going around the table. Everybody's crying, everybody's dead silent. And finally, after a moment of silence, Larry goes, okay, now what do you have? And one person finally spoke and said what was on all of our minds, nothing. Nothing, Mr. Fine. We have nothing left. And Larry said, no, that's a lie. Because see, you've lost everything. But no matter what you still have and what cannot be taken away from you is that you are a child of God. And I need you all to understand something before you become parents, before you become husbands and wives, before you become pastors, is that there are many things in this world that will be taken from you. There are many things that will go wrong, and you will have no control over it. And no one expects you to be perfect, and there are gonna be things that you screw up. And many of you have put your identity and your life into these roles, into these careers, into having these relationships. And what you need to understand if you're going to have a purposeful life and the life that God created you to live is that you need to understand that no matter what happens, you are a child of God. And God has you, and God loves you, and God sent his son to die for you on the cross, and that is something that can never be taken away. you need to find peace in that. Because that is the only thing that is guaranteed. I left that classroom and I cried all the way to my dorm room. I was broken. Because at that point in my life, I had built so much of my life around being able to get married one day and being able to be a husband. I wanted a family so bad because I come from a great family. All I wanted to build a family of my own. I wanted to be a husband. I wanted to be a dad one day. I lived so much for my parents' approval. I love my parents and I wanted to make my parents proud. And in many ways, I want them to be more proud of me than anything else. And then just my call to be a pastor, this life that I felt called to live, to be told that maybe, possibly, something could go wrong and that could be taken away from me. I mean, these are the things that I lived for, a successful family, a successful career, and being good at what I was doing and for people to be proud of me. And then to go through an experiment where somebody says, what if all of that is taken away from you? What do you have? Many of you, many of us, we would say, I have nothing. I have nothing to be thankful for. But what we all have to come to terms with, what we all have to understand and believe in our life is we have to let the peace of Jesus rule our hearts. And that peace is a peace that calls us to understand that no matter what is taken from us, no matter what season we're in, no matter what goes wrong, that we are still children of God. That the fact still remains that God sent his son to this earth to be here on this earth among us and to die for our sins. And he was resurrected. And there is power in that. And there is transformation in that. And we have to come to terms that no matter what people do or say about us or what they turn from, how they turn away from us or what they take from us, they can never take the fact that we are children of God. And that should be what our identity is shaped around. That should be the ultimate role that we want to live, is as children of God. Because there are no guarantees in this world. And there are seasons where we cannot find something to be thankful for. But what if we lived as children of God? If we lived from children of God, if we let the peace of Jesus rule our hearts, you know what would happen? We would not be thankful for what we have. We would be thankful for who has us. And that is a thankfulness that you don't have to cultivate, that you don't have to manufacture. That is a thankfulness that you can simply be, because you're living as a child of God. That changed so much of my identity. That changed so much of what I thought of success or what I thought of as a life worth living. And you know what? It was that pivotal moment, the things that changed inside of me, is what led to me meeting my wife and dating my wife. And when we were engaged during our senior year, guess what class I told her she had to go take before she could marry me? Personal development of a minister. They said, why are you here? You're a biology major. I'm here. My fiance told me I had to take it. And she went through the same experience as well, because I knew how pivotal and important that was. And I want you to know this morning that no matter what season you're going through right now or what you will go through one day, because I guarantee you there are seasons ahead where your health will not be something you're thankful for, where your family will be something you're not thankful for, where your job is something that you're not thankful for, whatever it may be, my best advice to you that I could give you is that if you don't want to live a life constantly trying to think of something to be thankful for, is to be thankful. And the only way you can do that is to let the peace of Jesus rule your heart. And what that simply means is wrapping your identity and purpose in life around ultimately knowing that you are a child of God. That no matter what is taken from you, no matter what you screw up, no matter what people say about you, you will always be a child of God. And God will always give you unlimited opportunities and unlimited chances. God will always be with you. He will never forsake you. He will never leave you. And he would never do anything to hurt you. Sometimes life just goes wrong. But don't let that determine the gratitude in your heart. be thankful. And do that by letting the peace of Jesus rule your heart. We're going to let the band come back up and we're going to sing a song. And as we close today in worship, I think the best thing that we can do today is we have to answer a question. Does the peace of Jesus rule your heart? Really, does it? Because that's something transformative that has to happen on the inside. That's a choice you have to make. That's an identity that you have to adopt, that you have to claim as your own. There's nothing mysterious about it. You have to grab hold of that and claim that and believe that and say, this is who I am. And when people say otherwise, you got to call them a liar and say, that's not who I am. I'm a child of God because I belong to a Father who created me, and I tremble in his presence. I tremble at his name because he is a great God who created me to live a life that was worth living, who created me to live a life full of purpose and meaning. And yeah, that means I'm going to have to do some scary stuff, but I'm not going to let anxiety and fear rule my life. And yeah, that means I'm going to have to give some things away, but you know what? Possessions and work and money, those things don't rule my life either. And you know what? It means I'm going to have way more questions than answers, but you know what? I'm not going to let my anxiety defeat me or let it have run of this. I'm going to trust and I'm going to have faith because I know he's setting me up for success. And so I'm following him. I'm driving blind, but at least at the end of this, I can say I lived a life worth living. At least I can say I emptied everything, and I gave it my all, and I can be thankful for that, because at least I'm leaving my children, my great-grandchildren, at least I'm leaving my family name, a legacy that's worth retelling, because I let the peace of Jesus rule my heart. Is that what you want, or do you just want average? Do you want fear? Do you want to, in your life, depress? Do you want it in your life with just material possessions and a bank account left to live? What is it that you want your life to add up to? You've got to claim that. You've got to adopt that. And you've got to believe it. So this morning, I want us to stand and I want us to sing and I want us to worship God and I want us to pray. Will you stand with me this morning? I want us to pray and I just want us to talk to God about this for a minute. I don't want us to just come to him. And you know what, this morning too, I want you to go ahead and bow your head, close your eyes. I want you to have an opportunity this morning. You know what, maybe you did walk in here curious. Maybe you did walk in here just because a family member told you you needed to because you were home. I want to invite you to follow Jesus. Or maybe you need to kind of reignite that and you need to give your life to him again. With every eye close, every head bowed, nobody's looking around, nobody sees what you're doing, it's all fine. It's just between you and God right now. This morning, if you feel God calling you right now, if you feel like God is inviting you to that life, if you want that peace of Jesus to rule your life, all you've got to do is pray this simple prayer to yourself. Jesus, I give you my life. Jesus, I give you my life. Give him your worries. Give him your anxiety. Give him your depression. Give him your bitterness. Give him your concerns this morning. Give him your life and let him have rule of it. God, this morning we come to you and we give you our lives. God, we give you rule of our lives, and God, we ask for your peace and our hearts. And God, we know that won't be a peace that guarantees that things are going to be okay. God, what we believe this morning is it a guarantee that we will have a life worth living, a life worth talking about, a life that builds a legacy that's worth passing on. God, this morning, that's what we ask of you. God, this morning, that's what we need from you. So will you guide us and will you fill our lives and will you show us what it is that we need to do? What are you calling us to do, God? Where is it that you need us to go and represent you? Because God, we are willing this morning to go, and we are willing this morning to be. And God, I just pray that it would be a transformative relationship with you that would change our hearts, that would make us become thankful, where we can live a life where we don't have to think of something to be thankful for, but that we can be thankful and we can rest in the peace of knowing that we are children of God. God, we give you our lives this morning. And we worship your name today. We pray these things in your name. Amen.
Thank you so much for joining us on our podcast today. We hope that you can make it to one of our Sunday morning experiences at 211 Boone Street at 10 a.m. Don't forget to check out our website, www.anchoredhope.church. You can also give online very easily and conveniently. We'd love to have your support on our mission to lead people to a growing relationship with Jesus.